So this sermon entitled Strange as Folks came to me a few weeks ago after I attended a Unitarian Universalist ministers meeting in New York City. The Metro District gathered at Community Church of New York, and ministers from the 56, now 57, I think, congregations in our district were in attendance. We had a guest speaker. Her name is the Reverend Meg Riley. She is the director of the Church of the Larger Fellowship. If you don't know what the Church of the Larger Fellowship is, you should. It's a way that Unitarian Universalists connect globally. Those who don't live near a congregation can be members of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, receive weekly sermons, and be connected via internet and other modern media. Meg is an amazing human being that I worked for when I was in seminary. I worked at our Faith in Action office in Washington, D.C., helping to lobby Congress and other political establishments on human rights issues that the Unitarian Universalist Association tries to promote on an ongoing basis. Meg told a story that touched me deeply, and I want to recount some of it with you today. When I worked for Meg, sometimes she'd invite the staffers back to her house, and we'd have dinner, and she and her partner, I think they're now married, would fix wonderful meals. And then joy came into their life in a profound way. They went to China, and they adopted a little girl, and they came home with this bundle of joy. And what she was a China doll. I mean, she virtually was that kind of little, amazing, beautiful girl, and oh, so lovely and delicate. And I worked for Meg for a couple of years, and my life brought me back to New York. Meg stayed in Washington for some years, and then she moved on. She's back in Minnesota now, where she's from. She now no longer has a daughter, but she has a son. That little girl that I knew at 2 and 3 is now a 20-year-old male. Meg recounted the transformation to the gathered community. I sat there dumbfounded for a portion of what she had to say. She recounted how her daughter then was drawn and attracted to boys' clothing. "I don't want the dress, Mommy. I want the suspenders and the overalls and the jeans. I don't want to take ballet. I want to do karate. I don't want to do the little girl things. I'm attracted to these other things that typically we would call little boy things." It was cute, Meg recounted, in the earliest stages of it. The kindergarten and the first grade and the second grade teachers, they went along with it. The adorable little girl got the two mommies to cut her hair in a little boy's cut. And it was cute. By the end of grade school, going on to middle school, this adorable little girl no longer had any friends. The girls in the grade school had more or less removed themselves from association with this little girl. She didn't fit the mold of what a girl was, and so little by little, she was in isolation. Well, the two moms, being good moms, moved their daughter into a more progressive setting, and middle school is tough for any of us, but the child was in the right place. By the time high school had come along, this girl who was wanting to be a boy started going into the boys' bathrooms in the high school and getting in trouble with the school. She started acting out, and it became very apparent to the parents that they needed help. But where do you get the help? If you go online, you'll find countless so-called professionals, and I say so-called professionals, because these people will say that they can change the sexual orientation of a child who's born the wrong way. There are countless programs to un-gay your son or re-feminize your daughter. This is a fairly common practice in America because we're a nation that is founded in many ways on those Hebrew and Christian scriptures. And the demonization of those who would dare to step out of the box that those scriptures define for us is not acceptable to apparently a huge proportion of the American populace. So this idea, strange as folks, came to light in my own heart and mind, and I sat with it. I sat with it a while because I tried to understand, when was it that I became the male that I am? When was it that I stopped being giddy over the smell of my little buddy, Bradley? Don't sue me, Bradley, wherever you are. I'll keep his last name out of it. Because I remember, I think I was in love with my little buddy, Bradley. I liked the smell of him. I told Lisa I can still remember what he smelled like. He was kind of like cheesy and apples all at the same time. I don't know. A little sweaty boy, right? But I remember my best friend. I loved being hugged by him. Was I somewhere on a sexual spectrum that I had never considered? I didn't know. I wasn't even sexualized at that point of my existence, at least not in a conscious way. So I started to think long and hard about this. And then these words came to me. What's your sexuality got to do with it? You see, human beings are just human beings. Whether you're somewhere on a sexualized spectrum from asexual, and I always think of Michael Jackson this way, I don't know if that's accurate, like he wasn't interested in sex at all. I hope that's where he was. To being hypersexual over here somewhere, where we used to laugh and joke and call them trisexual, so they try anything, right? Hypersexualized, right? In the middle of a sermon, you got thoughts going on, right? In the middle of doing your taxes, you're excited. A walk in the grocery store in the vegetable aisle brings all kinds of things to mind, right? I mean, a hypersexual, hey, right? I'm not condemning it now, it's all right. But that's where you need to go. See, because that's safe. It's all contained within you. And you have that right to be who you are on your individual human journey. See? So I came up with some words. I don't know. Let me read a little bit of this to you. Everybody is unique. That's the mantra of the modern story. Many people pride themselves on being different and one of a kind. Is that your story, all of you? You're one of a kind folks. This is particularly popular in Western mythos. Yet, three of the most prominent, salient, and obvious points that differentiate people are in culture, gender, and sexual orientation. And that's really where I want to go with this. So here I am, mostly an African-American, although I jokingly call myself a Jamaican, because I have been influenced by West Indian worldview. Bob Marley's one of my heroes, and I remember when the Caribbean states were trying to fight for their independence from, you know, the various forces of United States and European dominance, and there were problems, right? It was a problem for the United States when those Caribbean states wanted to form a union and kind of be able to deal with us, you know? So I got this, you know, Marcus Garvey ideology in me. But my dad's an American black man, so really and truthfully, I am my father's son, so I'm some combination of that. But my culture doesn't allow for sexualized differentiation. My culture never said it was okay to be gay, to be bi, to be somewhere in between, because I think there's more than gay, bi, or straight. There's all these places in between. So I never was able to fully be thoughtful or express myself because That wouldn't have been acceptable. The three men that lived across the street from us that dressed like the Supremes, and they were big guys. Man, they weren't the cute things they got in the Boston. They were big, strapping fellows that dressed like the Supremes. Huge eyelashes. The whole makeup was like, wow. They used to get rocks thrown at them. I remember the boys doing mean things to them. I even think I may have said something unkind once or twice myself, wanting to fit in with the other guys. So the cultural context from which I come never allowed for this. In fact, I can't think of anyone besides Don Lemon who's a black man that's out. I knew Luther Vandross, that man hit on me, but Luther never came out. And I mean never. Sweetest thing I ever met. What black man's out? Huh? Oh, the young football player. He doesn't have a job now, does he? He got cut by Dallas. Amazing. 15, what are we at, 30 million people? No black males of prominence out? We know there's black gay men. We know there's black bisexuals. We know it so much because the centers of black culture and life, Washington, D.C., Metro New York, Atlanta, and Los Angeles, the HIV rate for black women is the highest in the nation. And that's because of the bisexual lifestyle of black men. You see, so this cultural piece is damning in many ways. It's put people in boxes. It's not allowed people to fully evolve. I've got issues with it. I've got issues with it so bad that I had to write even a post myself, because recently at a family therapeutic session, I was annoyed by the way that the professional behaved. And it came to my attention that it wasn't what he was saying, it was the way he was saying it and the affect of his being, his personal being, in some way troubled me. That's a bad way for a minister to be. I'm supposed to love everybody, warts and all. But I had to be honest with myself. What's going on with me and what's going on with a culture that molds people into thinking there's something wrong with the way some human being lives their life? Now, this is difficult for me, but as I explored and understood it from a more global perspective, I understood that even my friends in the white community struggle with this. My friends in the Latina community struggle with it. My friends in the Asian community struggle with it. It hasn't been easy for any one of the major ethno-cultural groupings of this planet to come to grips with the acceptance of human sexuality in all of its breadth. What to do? How do we begin to dismantle the heterosexuality that's been the bedrock of the Western society for so long without throwing out the baby with the bathwater? How do we allow males who aren't on the spectrum, at least who don't want to admit they're on the spectrum, how do we allow them to be proud and affirmed males and both allow for space for other males to be effeminate males, males who aren't interested in sex, males who don't go behind women on the street and harass them, right? Some of you see that video that went viral? Woman can't walk down the street without being harassed, right? So this sexuality thing, this gender thing, this transgender thing, this queer thing is perplexing for me. And that cultural piece, whether you're an Irishman, funny how the people in Ireland allowed the gay Irishman to march in their St. Patrick's Day parade, but the Irishman of New York won't let the gay community participate. How interesting how they did this year. Blarney! What? You're speaking the truth, girl. Hallelujah. took a long time. Well, I'm glad to hear that an Irish community finally woke up. You see, because your culture will determine so much of this. Who's going to be accepted? Who won't be accepted? What's the psychology of it? What's the context of it? So I said to you that I wanted to look at this from at least three perspectives, right? Culture was one. Politics. That's not one that I offered you, but it really is at the cutting edge of this. What's the political equation that's going to allow for the GLBTQ communities to fully emerge and take their place within the American society? And where is it that these people, this community, can be fully out and fully part of the political process and not troubled by the aggressive tendencies of those who deny these folks their rights? How many people can live in Manhattan? How many people can live in, what's the most livable place in New Jersey? Is it Montclair? What's the most livable place in Jersey?
Princeton?
I had relatives chased out of there for being colored folks. Come on, man. Princeton, don't talk about it. Where is the safest place in New Jersey? It's probably Montclair, right? South Orange, right? So here in Essex County. First, here we are. So are we known as the place where people should come and gather? Oh, we fly the flag, but you have to do so much more than flying a flag. We have to participate in ways with people that folks typically don't do. There's a fear factor. There's a fear factor within the community of color that resides close to us. See, that GLBTQ concept is not applicable across the street in that ministry. It's not applicable in most of the ministries of this community. These people are to be marginalized. These people are to be forgotten. These people are to be demonized by a scripture that was written in a pre-literate era, and it's held fast to by people in this modern time. You know, you're right, and that gender issue ultimately may be the biggest one of all, and the one that so many of us will struggle with. I guess we're all aware that we're all female from inception, right? When first the egg is fertilized, and that little developing, is that the zygote? What is it? Is it the size of your tip of your pinky or something? But the reason men have breasts, right? It's because potentially we could have been females if it weren't for a dose of testosterone. Do I have that right? Some testosterone got in and created that male thing. Gender, what is that? And how do we define gender? How do we as a society put human beings into the boxes? This is really hard. Gender differentiation has gone on for a long time, but it's not as long as some of us think. If you look back in ancient times, there were some cultures that were able to allow different peoples, male and female, to move kind of more freely. What are these roles and how the determinant factors play on each of us? I tried to remember where I started from, how I became who I became, and it largely was associated with my viewing my father. My father was, he was this larger-than-life character. Only 5'5", you were a tiny man. But as a little boy, that man meant everything to me about what a man was. I'm going to be like Dad. I remember wanting to sit on the toilet and urinate, but I saw Dad standing, so I started standing too. right? These are little things, but little by little, a male who's around another male as a small child will emulate the man around him, for better or for worse. But my father wasn't open to the spectrum of humanity, and that imprinting was both positive and negative, in that my father's worldview as someone born in 1905, he wasn't quite ready for what the 1960s and the 2000s have to offer us. He was upset with how much Bella Abzug liked to speak, and he was upset by the bra burnings, and he was upset with so many things as the world he knew changed about him. And this idea of gender equality was not a normal part of his understanding. My dad wouldn't know what to do with what we have in our denomination, the LGBTQ ministries. We actually have a staff person, Reverend Annette Marquis, who works on this as a major issue for Unitarian Universalism. But this gender identity and expression, how did it come to be? Why did it come to be? Are we different? How many of you have known a woman that was stronger than the brothers in the household growing up? I remember sisters that could beat all their brothers' backsides, right? I remember boys that could dance better than any girl in a household, right? These things that we typically take for granted really shouldn't be taken for granted, and yet individuality hasn't been able to take full surface in our modern life. We raised the issue about the local, most recent election. Women's rights are under attack. It's not just women's rights. I, in many ways, have figured that this is an attack on womanhood and that the gender that is feminine is under attack, because ultimately, I'm feeling that the male gender is threatened. Why is a strong woman viewed in such harsh terms? Why is an outspoken woman viewed as a loudmouther? She's out of bounds. She's lost her femininity. If she dare be brazen about issues that need to be brought to the forefront. I want you, if you haven't done it, to go deeper with your own exploration of sexuality, of gender, and of identity. Explore yourself. Talk to the people you trust the most, because it's only in putting that mirror up, both to ourselves and in dialogue with others, that we fully begin to engage these issues about who and what we are, how we came to be that individual, why we continue to value or devalue another human being's way of being. I want you to go deeper and come to your own understanding about whether or not you have GLBTQ people in your life. And if you don't have them in your life, why don't you have them in your life? See, it was easy for me as a seminarian to say that I didn't get along with the Korean students that were in seminary with me, because the Korean students were so Methodist or so Presbyterian, and they told me about Jesus. I said, don't tell me about Jesus, brother. The first convert to following Yeshua was the Ethiopian eunuch. I said, black folks had Jesus a long time. You just got him. But that wasn't really the issue, was it now? The issue was they came at me with a different way of being that I didn't want to accept. I couldn't understand why Asian people had taken the religion of a dominant culture that invaded their space, that took over their societies, and they so willingly become the most vocal advocates. The churches of Korea are the largest Christian churches in the world. There's one in Seoul that has 100,000 members. They do services from 8 to 8. 8 to 10,000 people at each service every Sunday. Koreans have bought Christianity hook, line, and sinker. And may God bless them for it. But it wasn't about their Christianity. It was about my discomfort with something different. And so I had to break that chain of problematic relationship, and I started to sit with the Korean students during lunches and dinners. And I joined a dialogue with Korean students because I didn't like the fact that something was wrong inside of me. Why was I not embracing these people? And so I wonder, as I start to look at my own life and say, well, where are my GLBT friends? The friends that I do have from that community reside within Unitarian Universalism. But they're not the people that I grew up with or I live with. And I wonder what it is about my own makeup that hasn't allowed me to embrace those people. And so I'm going to study myself. And I'm going to query you. And I'm going to query everyone I can about this, because understanding my issues around gender identification and how it expresses itself in human relations is really what I'm looking for. I want continued growth for myself, and I encourage each of you to seek continued growth. You know, it's a funny thing. I thought biology determined your identity. But it's so much more complicated. I thought that culture gave you the framework to live out your life. But we're in a multicultural society with different images and ideas coming to us all the time. I thought that my religiosity would change me and change the dynamics of my lived life. And for the most part, I can say Unitarian Universalism has brought me into relationship with European Americans in a large way. I've become so engrossed with you white folks, I even married one. Yeah, baby. But the reality is, my Latino and Latina brethren aren't with me. And here in our community, I don't know if the fullness or the wholeness of the human family has come to be with us. We're missing some folks, as our pews are empty, mostly empty. And I'm missing the connection to the LGBTQ community, because they are my brothers and sisters, and Jer, and they're all these new pronouns. Do you know them? Do you know the new pronouns? I'm going to have to print them up for you. Lisa knows them. She's going to give me a lesson. The new reality is that if we're not able to embrace and speak about these things, we're missing the boat, folks. So, what's gender got to do with it? It's got everything to do with it. It's got to do with it because unless we're being intentional about our open-ended search for understanding of what another human being is, we've missed the point. And here we are in this 21st century, and the attacks on the LGBTQ community continue, and something more has to be done. We can celebrate where marriage equality is going. We can celebrate the fact that we're going to have a black woman, be the Attorney General of the United States, hopefully. The Senate will confirm her. And yet, you and I know that there are far too few people from the full spectrum of humanity in all the most important places making the decisions. I was looking for some universal psychology to help me with this. And I came across things like cross-cultural studies and gender studies that were not available to me when I went to university. Any of you take any gender studies when you were in school? Those things, gender studies. You had one? I found out that we are more human than otherwise, and our sexuality is really just one issue. I struggle with this, and I struggle with my own understandings of self. I struggle with this because it's in my family, and we haven't dealt with it. I've got two friends that were gay, and we never dealt with the issues about their gayness, and they both died from HIV some years ago. Never dealt with it. So I'm asking you, get your bearings on sexual orientation and gender. Get yourself right. It's so much more than being a liberal who says, I agree with rights for all. It's so much more than being a liberal who will vote for someone who espouses the right things. It has to do with that internal transformation. The causes of sexual orientation have yet to be fully determined, right? From a scientific standpoint. They're trying to isolate the gene that says why somebody's gay or why somebody's bisexual. They're working on it. They haven't fully gotten there. But here's where we can get. If you put the mantra of love firmly in your heart, you can't go wrong. And for us here in Orange, in a community that does not embrace the LGBTQ community in its fullness, from a people of color perspective, there's much work to be done. I don't know who the spokespeople are for that community here in Orange, or who they are in Essex County. I know it can't be easy or even safe for them to be outspoken critics. Our theologically conservative friends don't want them to be out, don't want their voices heard. But I know as long as I have breath and as long as I get to preach a sermon, I'm going to do my part, and I'm asking you to do yours too. For this and many other things around human ecology, human sexuality, cultural appropriation and misappropriation, I pray that we all get on the bus and ride for freedom of everybody. Amen.